All right, y'all, welcome to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. Should have Adam Morrow on the line from Interpress Service from Cairo, Egypt. Welcome back to the show, Adam. How are you doing?
Hey, good. Thanks, Scott. Good to be back.
Good. Very happy to have you back here. Egypt Constitution faces Islamic coloring. You write your last piece at IPS, I think, from April the 4th.
I think that was the last thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we've got some developments, and from Texas, I don't know very much about what's going on. Just basically the headlines worth of depth on it, which is that the Muslim Brotherhood has gone ahead and said they're running a presidential candidate like they promised they wouldn't. Not sure if that's a big deal or not, or why it should be or shouldn't be. And then also Omar Suleiman, who we all remember from the New York Times coverage from February 2011, was Obama and Hillary Clinton's pick to be Mubarak's successor, the former head of the secret police, and he's now announced that he's running for president. And then, of course, I guess since we've talked, I'm trying to remember the NGOs, the American NGOs. Oh, no, we talked about this, how they had already been arrested and who exactly they were working with and how well and all that. So I guess if you want to pick up any one of those to start us off, maybe could you... I guess if I get to pick, could we talk about the Muslim Brotherhood announcing that they're running a candidate, and what's the big deal about that?
Sure, sure, definitely. There have been some major developments. As you know, ever since last year's revolution, there's hardly a day goes by without some new, incredible, breaking political development here. The latest thing is, if you've been following it, you'll know that that the candidacy registration period for presidential, would-be presidential candidates just ended in Egypt. That lasted, I can't remember how long, maybe 2 or 3 weeks. And it just ended 2 days ago. And the last couple of days brought a handful of 11th-hour surprises, sort of last-minute candidacies that people didn't expect. The most surprising of which would probably be the Muslim Brotherhood candidate. The Muslim Brotherhood basically nominating a presidential candidate from within its own ranks, which it had, since the days of the revolution itself, since the days of the 18-day uprising last year, they have been consistently saying that they would not field a candidate from within their own ranks. Although there were several prominent Islamist candidates, there were no Muslim Brotherhood members running for the presidency up until about 2 or 3 days ago, when the group suddenly announced that it would be fielding its second-in-command, his name is Hayrat al-Shatr, for the highest office, surprising everybody. Needless to say, their critics have jumped on it, have jumped on the move, pointing to it as an example of treachery and dishonesty on the part of the Brotherhood, and basically saying that this confirms their suspicions that the Brotherhood, more than anything else, was out to monopolize power. The Brotherhood defended the move by basically saying that circumstances have changed in the last several months. Quite honestly, the statement that they gave justifying the move wasn't really convincing. I have yet to hear a really convincing reason for their 11th hour decision to field a candidate. But it's caused a big stir here, and people are saying, analysts are saying that it's basically changed the electoral map.
Well, and what was their excuse? They were complaining about the military not handing over power to the parliament fast enough or something like that, no?
Well, this is one of the things. They've been pushing the ruling military council to dissolve the current government of Prime Minister Kamel El-Ghansouri, which the military council has refused to do. They're also attributing their changed position to the fact that, I mean, they basically feel sort of, the last several months has seen them swallow up the Muslim Brotherhood swallow up a lot of very important political institutions, as you know. The first being the People's Assembly or the lower house of parliament, half of the seats of which they took, with another quarter of seats going to their Islamist allies or fellow Islamist parties. They did similarly well in Shura Council elections. The Shura Council is the upper house of parliament, a consultative house of parliament, which they swept as well maybe 2 months ago. After that, they basically they're also monopolizing, if that's the right word, a constituent assembly that was drawn up a couple of weeks ago, which has been tasked with writing a new national constitution. So the importance of this constituent assembly really can't be overestimated.
All right, now hold it right there, Adam. I'm sorry, we've got to take this break. We'll be right back with Adam Moore, IPSnews.net. All right, y'all, welcome back. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Adam Morrow on the phone from Cairo. And now, boy, we're talking about the complicated mess of Egyptian democracy as it's shaping up so far. And, of course, you know, a big part of all of this, I mentioned Omar Suleiman there, you know, a big part always at the forefront, probably at the mind of many Egyptians too, is what role is the State Department, the CIA, playing in all of this? Seems like their NGOs got shut down and kicked out of the country. But are they crawling all over the place? Are they backing just the Facebook generation liberals? Or are they working with the Muslim Brotherhood like the old days? Or what's going on? Do you know?
Oh boy, these are all questions I myself would love to have answers to. I mean, I don't have evidence of anything, but one can only surmise what's going on behind the scenes.
Well, there's usually a kind of tendency of people to know good and well which outside forces are backing which factions in their own country, kind of thing, right? Don't they have a feeling for who America's? I mean, obviously, Suleiman is the guy that Hillary Clinton told the New York Times, "We want Suleiman," a year ago.
Sure. Suleiman was always America's man. I mean, just by virtue of the fact that he was, you know, general intelligence czar under Mubarak, tells you that it's all you need to know to understand whose side he was playing on. I also think it's worth mentioning at the height of the revolution last year, some very interesting stuff came out from WikiLeaks, specifically about Omar Suleiman, that was largely overlooked just because of all the other things that happened to have been going on at the time. But there were reports, I believe it was WikiLeaks, basically saying that Suleiman at one point during the revolution had actually considered the idea of allowing Israeli troops to come into the Sinai Peninsula in order to maintain security there or maintain stability there. While the revolution was going on.
Well, that'll endear him to the locals.
Right. Yeah. Well, what's interesting is, a lot of people are actually saying that the guy does have his electoral prospects aren't terrible, and that he does enjoy support. I heard that he enjoys a degree of tribal support from some of the Bedouin tribes in Upper Egypt. Which I didn't know about earlier, but I mean, he is being floated as a viable candidate. You know, one would think just because of the revolution last year that he would be a non-starter just because he had been Mubarak's man for so long, but people are saying that he does have a chance, and his chances might be bolstered by the appearance of this new Muslim Brotherhood candidate, because people are talking about the dangers of splitting the Islamist vote, basically. Where, you know, you have two or three Islamist front runners, who are going to share the Islamist votes. Whereas if Omar Suleiman emerges as the sort of main, you know, as the primary, foil to an Islamist candidate, he could end up doing better than we might expect.
Yeah, I guess. You know, a year ago, the Muslim Brotherhood basically was trying to stay in the background and bide their time. But maybe
exactly.
It exerted
a lot of energy trying to convince its critics at home and abroad that it did not plan to basically take over the country. It repeated that many, many times. And
or maybe they waited too long. It sounds like some other people said, okay, fine, we'll fill that vacuum if you guys are going to pretend to wait, you know?
Right. But I mean, one of the main components of that, of those reassurances, was saying, you know, look, we're not going to field a presidential candidate. You know, yeah, we took Parliament and we took the upper house, but we even have a commanding role now in the Constituent Assembly, which is tasked with writing a new constitution. But we're not going to run for the executive office. And at the very last minute, they ended up doing the exact opposite and ended up fielding a candidate.
Well, you know, it seems like really whoever runs the civilian government, it's still only like 60-40 or something compared to the power of the military over the country, right?
How do you mean exactly?
Like the military is still more than half the state by far, right? Or not?
In terms of what exactly? I mean, they do represent the executive authority. Mubarak did delegate executive authority to the ruling Supreme Council of the Armed Forces, and they are still the de facto, the country's de facto ruler, if that's what you mean.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, for example, if it came to a real disagreement between the military and whoever got elected to the parliament and or the presidency, there's really not much question that they would just remove them. If there was a conflict, who would win, or what?
They definitely would have the final say, and this is the reason why drafting a new constitution is so important, because the new constitution will presumably, you know, spell out the relationships and the, you know, the respective powers of the three different branches of government. And until that's made clear, the ruling military council will have the final say.
Mm-hmm. All right, now, I did mention at the beginning about Egyptian foreign policy, such as it is, and I guess we don't have too much time, but could you update us a little bit on the state of the Rafah border crossing with the Gaza Strip?
Sure, there's really not too much to report in terms of foreign policy these days because so much focus, so much attention is going towards the, you know, the just going towards the domestic scene. So there hasn't really been much movement in terms of foreign policy. There's been no radical opening of the Rafah border crossing. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, people should never forget the Rafah border crossing. I mean, which is so incredibly, the current state of the border between Egypt and Gaza Strip. Because the livelihoods and well-being of 1.5 million people in the Gaza Strip actually depend on it. But from what I can understand, there's been no radical change. I mean, they're letting passenger traffic go in and out, but it still doesn't function like a normal, transit point between two sovereign countries should be. You know, there's no mass trade between the two countries. I think that the Gazans still have to depend mostly on the underground tunnels in order to get most of their most basic needs, including building materials and food and fuel. So I think the idea in Gaza, at least on the part of Hamas, is which has governed Gaza since 2006, 2007. I think they're basically just waiting to see what happens in Egypt. I know that they've managed to keep on very good terms with the ruling military council here. They haven't come out with any statements slamming the military council here. I think they're just sort of keeping their head down and sort of keeping their fingers crossed that an Islamist-led government is going to sooner or later assume control of Egyptian affairs, at which point the border will be opened entirely.
Mm.
But until that happens, I think they're just sort of, you know, biding their time.
Yeah. All right, good. Well, thought we got to cover that for a minute anyway. Thanks very much for your writing and your time on the show, as always.
Happy to be here, Scott.
Everybody, that's Adam Morrow from Interpress Service, ipsnews.net. And like I was saying, his latest piece is Egypt Constitution Faces Islamic Coloring.